This episode is brought to you by Progressive. What would you do with an extra $700? Buy a plane ticket? Pay down your student loan? Treat yourself to those shoes you've been eyeing. With Progressive, you can find out. Drivers who switch and save an average of $699 a year on car insurance. Get your quote online at progressive.com and see how much you could be saving.
I'm Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 18 of Unformidable, where we take a look back at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, since every player who dons the orange and blue is, in their own way, unformidable. So, the trade deadline is upon us, and boy, the Mets certainly know how to make for memorable trade deadlines. Now, you know, because the franchise is so memorable and the trade's so memorable, that doesn't necessarily make for great unformidable candidates, because your Victor Zambranos and Scott Kazmirs and Rick Ownby and Tom Seaver and Keith Hernandez, and these are all just names etched in Met lore to an extent, and perhaps we've created some new ones this week. Perhaps Anthony Kay or Simeon Woods Richardson will be on that list someday. I mean, don't get me wrong, I actually thought that was a good trade in a vacuum, but of course trades aren't made in a vacuum, they're made on major league rosters, and it does seem like the Mets are, sometimes it feels like Brody just likes to do things just to do things, which is a little alarming, but we'll see how it all plays out. Before I was starting this podcast, I found out we traded Varghi. I mean, selling him for Straw would not be a bad move to me, and any vacuum whatsoever, but it should be an interesting couple of days. But for the context of this podcast, we don't know who those future unformidable Mets are that might be being made and brought to the franchise or sent away from the franchise as we speak or over the next couple of days. So, as I said, I felt like a lot of the trade deadline players were very memorable. And even if they didn't have long Met careers, sometimes that just makes them very memorable that they're in a notable trade. So for this week, I just decided to focus on a Met who was traded to the Mets and away from the Mets, and in fact was traded 8 times in his Major League Baseball career. Today we're going to look back at a memorable 1-plus season Met, Mr. Willy Montañez, who, though he was not specifically traded at the trade deadline, as far as I can see, I know the trade deadline has kind of moved and fluctuated, but no June 15th or July 31st or August 31st trades in his ledger. But boy, was he moved in some interesting trades involving some prominent names and some Hall of Famers, and in fact, in what you could argue is the most famous or notable trade in Major League Baseball history. So, away we go and look at the journey of Willy Montañez in his major league career before and until he got to the New York Mets. So Willy Montañez was born in Cataño, Puerto Rico, where he was originally drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals in 1965 as an amateur. He spent one season with the Florida Rookie League Cardinals, and he was selected by the California Angels in the 1965 Rule 5 draft. So, memo to myself, I want to ask our minor league team at From Complex to Queens, or just start Googling away and find out exactly how the Rule 5 draft works, because I didn't think, I assume the rules have changed, because I thought you were not eligible for that after 1 year in an organization as a 17-year-old. But hey, that's how it worked in Willy Montañez's day, it would appear. So he was drafted by the California Angels, and he made his major league debut with them at the age of 18. He appeared in their 1966 season opener as a pinch runner. He did not get in a bat at the game. He just pinch ran. He appeared in 8 games, mostly as a pinch runner. Did record 2 at-bats as a California Angel, striking out in each of them. He did steal a base, though. And I guess the Angels, I guess the rule, that aspect of the Rule 5 draft apparently still worked the same way because they sent him down and had to return him to the Cardinals organization on May 5th of 1966. And he actually wouldn't return to the major leagues until 1970. So it's a fascinating back of the baseball card, 1966, 1970. So he played in the Cardinals org, moving up slowly. His numbers were okay, not dramatic. You know, I know you're not supposed to scout the stat line, but that's all I really have right now at this point. I couldn't find any late 60s Willie Montanez scouting reports. The numbers were solid, but he was also way below league average. Again, he made his major league debut at 18, so he's in, you know, double A at age 20. So I'm presuming he was still a prospect with some promise or, you know, some possibility of promise. And on October 7th, 1969, the St. Louis Cardinals made a trade that did not involve Willie Montanez quite yet. You may have heard of this trade. St. Louis Cardinals traded Tim McCarver, Joe Horner, Byron Brown, and Curt Flood to the Philadelphia Phillies for Dick Allen, Jerry Johnson, and Cookie Rojas just after the season ended in October of 1969. Curt Flood, citing the team's poor record, the dilapidated Connie Mack Stadium, and his fear of belligerent and racist fans in Philadelphia, decided he didn't want to report to Philadelphia, didn't want to, quote him, pick up 12 years of my life and move to another city. So Curt Flood refused to report in the trade, and baseball history was about to be made. Flood met with Players Union head Marvin Miller, who informed him the union was prepared to fund a lawsuit if he wanted, so Flood wrote to then-Commissioner Bowie Kuhn, demanded to be declared a free agent. And that's probably, I understand that might be a more interesting story, but it's not a Met story, so can't go too far down that road. But it was a case that went to the Supreme Court, Flood v. Kuhn, 407 U.S. 258, for you lawyers and site checkers out there. My office job is at a law firm, so I could pull that sucker up, and maybe I have, but don't tell the people in my office. And while baseball's antitrust exemption was upheld in that case, it was, you know, I think it's considered the first brick in the wall towards free agency, you know, which of course Curt Flood was instrumental in getting this process going and sacrificed a lot of his career to it and should probably be in the Hall of Fame with Marvin Miller for that. But, you know, don't take my word for it. There's probably much better, more eloquent books written about it or a great baseball project song about Curt Flood, or many other places you could hear about Curt Flood and that interesting aspect of baseball history. So you might be saying, what does this digression have to do with Willie Montanez? Well, in April of 1970, when it was clear that Curt Flood was not going to report to the Philadelphia Phillies, the Cardinals had to send Willie Montanez and Jim Browning to the Phillies to complete this trade. Montanez appeared in 18 games with the Phillies in 1970, before joining the team in full in 1971, where he was starting center fielder, even though he was generally first baseman by trade. He hit 30 home runs, which was actually wound up being his career high, had 99 RBIs, and finished second in the National League Rookie of the Year balloting behind Atlanta Braves catcher Earl Williams. And while he'd have a long and pretty average career, actually, as we'll discuss later, although he was very memorable and had great flair, that would actually wind up being his best season that rookie year. He had a 798 OPS, a 124 OPS plus, and finished, as we said, second in the Rookie of the Year balloting, and actually really, I think he had a 1.9 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, which was the highest he'd record in a single season in his career, although he was steadily average. He was with the Phillies until May of 1975, eventually moving to his natural position of first base in 73, where he stayed for the remainder of his career. In 1975, he was traded to the San Francisco Giants for Gary Maddux, so trade number two. And the following year, trade number three, again in midseason, Montanez found himself changing teams, going from the Giants to the Atlanta Braves. Less notable, Darrell Evans was involved in that trade. He came from the Braves to the Giants in that trade. 1976, the only black ink, as it were, on the back of Montanez's baseball card, aside from 2 years when he led the league in grounding into double plays, is that he played in 163 games to lead the National League. Thanks to the timing of the trade, he had played 60 games for the Giants, and he got in 103 for the Braves. So it's a pretty unbeatable, unless you get one of those cool one-game playoffs, it's hard to hard to beat the 163 games played. So Montañez finished 76 with the Braves and had a solid 1977 season, average by league standards, just a 99 OPS plus, but with a very poor Braves team, he made the All-Star team as their only representative in his sole full season with the Braves. So after 1977, for the fourth of eight times, Willie Montañez is about to be traded. Now, can you guess a team that might have interest in a veteran presence who appeared on an All-Star team and had a notable name in Major League Baseball, even if he might be heading towards the downside of his career and might not be worth trading for? If you said the New York Mets, well, you've been paying attention. On December 8th, 1977, Willie Montañez was part of a four-team, I believe 11-player trade. If I tried to break down the whole trade to you, that's more time than I'm allotted for this silly little podcast. So just to note some big names in the trade, the Texas Rangers sent Burt Blyleven to the Pirates, the Mets sent John Matlack to the Rangers, and John Milner to the Pirates. That seems like a lot to give up there. And the Mets acquired Willie Montañez from the Braves and also acquired Tom Grieve from the Texas Rangers in that trade. Oh wait, 12 players. The Mets got the infamous player to be named later, who wound up being Ken Henderson, who came over in spring training. So there you go. Four teams, 12 players. Trade number four in the career of Willie Montañez. Geez, no wonder Curt Flood. God, imagine getting traded eight times in your career and having to move that many times. And people wonder why you would maybe object to the reserve clause and want some say in where you go in life. And people get angry at free agency. But anyway. Different podcast, different subject.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Saving money on your car insurance is easy with Progressive. It's an average savings of $699 a year for customers who switch and save. In fact, customers can qualify for an average of six discounts on their auto policy when they switch to Progressive. Discounts just for starting a quote online or owning multiple vehicles. Get your quote online at progressive.com and see how much you could be saving. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, I'm Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, host of The Vergecast. We've been revamping The Vergecast more and more lately, and we're coming out with episodes twice a week, sometimes even a third bonus episode. On Tuesdays, I talk to influential people around the world of tech, like Microsoft founder Bill Gates and other tech execs like the founder of Lime Scooters, the CEO of Beyond Meat. We've also been talking to a lot of reporters and academics about the major pressing policy issues in tech, like Facebook's content moderation, they're not doing great, YouTube's harassment plan, or lack thereof, and whether or not the government should break up Amazon, which maybe they should. And then every Friday, I sit down with executive editor Dieter Bohn and Paul Miller for our chat show. We cover the latest in tech news and product reviews. We bring in our other reporters from around The Verge. That show is a party. You should listen to it. You can hear all that and more if you subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'd love for you to listen and join us. So again, subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you there.
So Willie Montañez really spent one season plus with the Mets, but he was pretty memorable, and people's Met memories of him seem very positive. It's kind of just before my time. The first year I really remember is 1979, and even that's a little tangential. But yeah, then of course these things were true of him throughout his career, but you know, just focusing on the Mets, of course, 1978 was a very dark, bleak season. The franchise was still reeling from trading away the franchise, Tom Seaver, in 1977. You know, John Matlack leaving in the end of 77, another piece of that 73 NL champion team. So while Montañez had a very Willie Montañez-y 1978 with the Mets, and that to say he's just a very standard 17 homers, 96 RBIs, 712 OPS, 102 OPS plus, so pretty league average production at first base. But Willie Montañez achieved average production with flair and with style. He was very flashy first baseman. Flashy sounds loaded. Let's say with style and panache. He fielded his position and he hit and he was memorable. Willie Montañez was doing the snatch catch long before Ricky Henderson on foul pop-ups. He had a great style. When he would catch the ball at first after recording an out, he would kind of make the switch behind his back. He would pass the ball behind his back before flipping it back to the pitcher. And he had a very notable pre-at-bat routine, and especially home run trot. When he'd walk up to the plate, he would flip the bat in his hands, kind of vertically. You could find video of it on YouTube, three or four times. He had a very deliberate take his position at the plate. And when he would hit a home run, he had a very notable home run trot. He would as he approached each base, he would slow down a lot and do a little crow hop, almost like jumping on the base. Sometimes put his hand on his helmet, not quite the Edwin Encarnacion parrot, but also very cool. Then he'd kind of speed up and repeat the process, jumping on every base, and then he would really walk those last 20 feet down the third base line to home plate to cross the plate. So again, in my opinion, for a franchise in dire need of anything positive or anything memorable, this colorful style and his joie de vivre was a really welcome tonic. And I've actually found it interesting that the Met memories I could find and the family that I have who watched the Mets in the 70s had just nothing but fond, delightful memories of that style and panache of Willie Montagnez, and again seem to remember him more fondly than his numbers might dictate they should. Found that particularly interesting because, I don't know, I just picture in today's day and age the Mike Franceses bawling and moaning, showing up the team, and just the probably racially tinged hatred he would get for any kind of style or any kind of styling that he did. So, maybe that was out there, or maybe the players just settled that between the lines by throwing at each other and giving each other concussions. I don't know. But the memories I could find of Willie Montagnez were very positive and appreciative of that joy. And in fact, a great video I'm going to tweet out on YouTube. The Mets in 1978 booked the San Diego Chicken to come out to Shea Stadium. I have a little problem with that personally. I mean, when you have the greatest mascot in the world, why are you bringing in an outsider to perform? But one highlight of that appearance was the Chicken. He came out of the Mets dugout and just did a Willie Montagnez impression, from flipping the bat to walking up to home plate to mocking hitting a home run and mocking the Willie Montagnez walk around the bases. And if you can look up Willie Montagnez home run trot and then look up the Chicken doing it, it's very impressive. Damn that Chicken. Unfortunately, 1979 was very sub-average for Willie Montagnez. He played 109 games with the Mets. He only hit 5 homers, 47 RBIs, batted .234. It's actually some of the worst numbers he had over a season or a part of a season. So on August 12th, 1979, Willie Montagnez was on the move again in a rare trade that really worked out well for the Mets, where, I guess not that rare, but, at any rate, they traded Willie Montagnez to the Texas Rangers for Ed Lynch and, let's face it, probable future unformidable candidate Mike Jorgensen. So pretty good couple of players who contributed a lot to the franchise for Willie Montagnez. And Montagnez would play only 3 more seasons for several more franchises. Again, he was traded 8 times in his career. The Met trade was trade number 5. He would go from the Rangers to the San Diego Padres in a trade that involved Gaylord Perry. He went from the Padres to the Montreal Expos for Tony Phillips and the immortal cash considerations. And coming full circle, he went from the Expos to the Pirates for John Milner, who was once traded for Willie Montagnez, as we mentioned, 4 years earlier. Montagnez's career numbers were pretty standard. He had a .275 average, .327 on-base percentage, .402 slugging, so .729 OPS, .102 OPS plus. Like I said, pretty average. His Met numbers are below those thanks to that crash and burn in 1979. He had a .665 OPS and an .87 OPS plus. Statistically, the only season worse than his 79 portion with the Mets, he actually did really well with the Rangers when the Mets traded him to kind of balance out his 79 numbers. But the only place he really had worse career numbers than the Mets was his career denouement in Pittsburgh. But overall, he was just a consistently average baseball player. He appeared in 1,632 career games, and he recorded 1.7 career BWAR, according to Baseball Reference. And over, 14 seasons in the big leagues, as I said, his WAR was almost never above or below 2. He was consistently almost in a -1 to +1 range. His high was that 1971 Rookie of the Year season where he recorded a 1.9 WAR, and he had a low of -0.8 in 1979 with the Mets and Rangers, -2 of that with the Mets. But again, he kind of finished off the season with a flourish in Texas once he left the Mets. Finishing with a flourish when you leave the Mets, who could imagine? But he was definitely very memorable. He was considered a great fielder, a great arm for a first baseman, as probably evidenced by his playing in the outfield, not just in right, but in center as a young player. So his fielding numbers were good, but there are other mitigating factors. He had a mediocre eye, so on base percentage wasn't great. Grounded into a lot of double plays. I mentioned that he led the league twice, so that probably, his counting stats probably are a little more positive looking, although really not all that much more positive looking than his more advanced numbers. But he did it with style and joy, so that's something to really appreciate, something that clearly made him unformidable. Willie Montanez is 71 today. Not today, I don't think it's his birthday, but he is 71 this year. He is healthy after a recent battle with cancer, and he makes frequent appearances at fan events. He made one for the Mets this year in April. I think he makes the most with the Phillies, where he probably did have the best seasons of his career. And one other final note that I thought was really cool is if you look at those career similarity scores on Baseball Reference, his highest career similarity score is with Hubie Brooks. So love to drop those random Met references. I mean, that's really what we're doing here writ large, isn't it, is random Met references. At any rate, we hope you liked shining a little light on the light-filled Willie Montanez. Thank you for listening to Unformidable. Please go to AmazonAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. Please subscribe, leave a review for us. It really helps. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, and you can also reach out to the show at Unformidable on Twitter. Thank you, and as always, let's go Mets.